That's
I'd like to introduce Mr. Joanne Roach, and we will introduce ourselves.
Okay. Have a seat. We'll go around and introduce ourselves just by where we live and name, and then ask you to make an opening statement, and then we'll have about 40 minutes or so of questions, and then from then we'll have you make a final comment, and all done in about 45 minutes.
Sounds good.
So,
I'm Carl Crimmins from Champlin, Minnesota.
Nancy Black, Minneapolis.
Marilyn Cathcart, Minneapolis.
Sonia Huonado from Moorhead.
Nani Bailey, Rochester, Minnesota.
Zainab Hassan, New Brighton, Minnesota.
Earl Rasmussen from Blaine, Minnesota.
Kent Eklund, St. Paul.
Carolyn Williams from St. Cloud.
Dave Larkin, Bemidji.
Yvonne Condell, Moorhead.
Tim Hibbs, Maple Grove.
Janet Lexon, Lakeville.
John Dorn, Mankato.
And I'm Sally. I'm the TCAC staff.
Nice to meet you all.
Great.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the group, and we're now ready to hear your opening comment.
Okay. Well, when I saw John out in the hall, he told me that I should relax because this is going to be just a discussion. I relax. I suppose you're probably wondering why I, you know, have applied for this job. So I think I'll spend my few opening minutes here talking a little bit about that. I began my career in the community college system as a student after I graduated from high school in Hibbing. And I have to say my 2 years that I spent at then Hibbing Junior College, as I look back over my whole educational experience, there were many years of education as a student, that was my best experience in higher ed, was at the community college. And that building, being there in my hometown and being affordable, allowed me and most of my friends the opportunity to get a college education. And we were, of course, the first generation, all of us in our families, of people to go to college. My children, two of my children, had the same experience. They attended Mesabi Community College when I was teaching there, each of them for 2 years, and then they went on to complete their engineering degrees. And as we talk about the community college system, they share the same experience. They felt that they had a really quality education, close to home. It was affordable, and it was in a really nurturing environment. Of course, it helped that their mother was there teaching as well. I started off my teaching career in the community colleges as a part-timer. I taught part-time for 3 or 4 years, and then in 1985, I was hired full-time. I was a very active college professor, college instructor. I was involved in many of our self-governance kinds of committees and academic and curriculum committees. So I have come to know that side of MNSCU and this operation. Early on in my teaching career, I was asked to be one of six faculty members from around the state to bargain our biennial contract. And I think I've lost track, but I believe I've done 7 of those over the years. So most of my teaching career, I was involved with bargaining the state contract, first for the community college faculty and then for the community and technical college faculty after we merged, our two unions came together. Also early on in my career, I was encouraged to run for state office in our faculty association, and I did. And throughout my entire career, I was either the secretary or the vice president. I started off with the community colleges again, and when the community and technical colleges merged, I remained the vice president for liberal arts throughout the rest of my tenure. I was also involved in the merging as a part of the leadership team that brought together the community and the technical colleges after MNSCU merged, you know, the entire higher ed system. So I've had lots of experience. As an officer, I spent a lot of time, in fact, a lot of it in this room and that room next door. I was a registered lobbyist, and I worked for promoting Minsku's budget, promoting Minsku's bonding, promoting student issues, promoting faculty issues, both for the community and technical college faculty and for the IFO, the inter-faculty organization, as well. So I've had a lot of experience with many of those issues. With my being an officer on the state level, I also worked at Minsku and with Minsku a lot. There are a lot of labor management committees that I was on, chaired, co-chaired, worked with members of the Office of the Chancellor, lots of policy drafting committees, policies for PSEO, for credentialing, whatever. So I've had a lot of experience in the Minsku system. As I look around the table, I see some gray hair, and talking to some of you, I know that you've retired. On kind of a personal note, I retired about a year ago, and I found as I was getting closer and closer to my retirement and then went to a couple of retirement parties for me that my colleagues and my friends and even I, myself, we were talking about me in the past tense. I found that really disconcerting, and I thought, you know, I'm going to have to do something about this. So as many people who are retired do, I started to think about what is it now that I'm going to do with the last third of my life. And I decided that the skills that I had the opportunity to hone being a part of the Minsku system and doing the things that I had done and the knowledge base that I had gained over the years was not obsolete. I was not spent and used up, and my knowledge was not obsolete. And I thought the natural place, perhaps, to do my volunteer work would be to apply for the Minsku Board of Trustees. That would be a real natural kind of a fix. And I decided that what better way to kind of cap off my career than to serve the system that I really have been dedicated to throughout my professional life, to serve it one more time in yet a different way. And so that's why I'm here today.
Great. Thank you. A big first activity for the trustees that will be appointed and joining their veteran colleagues will be the selection of the next chancellor. That will occur during the first year of your term. Can you talk a little anything about any leadership transitions that you've been a part of in your career and some principles you've come to accept as what works well for a leadership transition? It might also include some discussion about some of the attributes that you think we might be looking for in the next chancellor. So both a process and a content question.
Okay. I wasn't aware that the chancellor is looking to retire, but eventually he has to do that, I guess.
At the end of June in 2011 is his time. Okay. So it's starting.
I'm hoping there has been some planning so far on the Board of Trustees for this transition, because this is something that takes some serious thought. I'm not aware of what they have in place yet. I also think whenever there is a transition as large as this is with a system this size, it would be good to actually have a transition, an overlapping kind of period. I hope we build that in, because there's a lot for a new chancellor to learn. I know that we would do a nationwide search. I think it's important in many ways to find someone who kind of matches up what we have in Minnesota. Collective bargaining is a huge function in this state, and my experience has been that people who are not accustomed to working in a collective bargaining state often have a little harder learning curve. Because it is somewhat a different environment, so I would hope that we would pay particular attention to people from states somewhat like our own. I also would hope that we would not rule out one of our own. Mm-hmm. I think we often, to me, one of the problems in Minsku is that we don't know our own strength and our own power and who we are yet. We are fifth or eighth largest in the nation, depending on how you want to look at this. We always want to look elsewhere for people that we think are somehow better, you know, or more suited, or can teach us all of these different things. And we overlook what we have, the jewels, the gems that we have within our own system and within our own state. Without having thought about that question previously, those I think are the things that I would say, and I would hope that this Board of Trustees now has this as a top priority, getting a plan in place so that we don't do it in a nilly-willy or willy-nilly fashion.
That was the question that we were urged to ask all the candidates because it is going to be such a dominant theme for the first year or so.
Okay.
Yep. Yes, Yvonne?
I'd like to know your thoughts about how you would fit in a different role. You've been on one side of the table, and as a trustee, you have to be on the other side of the table. What niche do you think you can fill? It would be creative, innovative, and move forward the agenda for MedSQ.
I like to think that I'm open-minded, and I've had to be open-minded in the roles that I've played. I have had to be a problem solver. I have had to listen very carefully to find the common thread when there are two disparate sides, whether it's at the bargaining table or over an issue. I also am a trained mediator. I think maybe that might be my skill, is to be able to look at disparate sides of an issue, to listen to people and to hear the common thread that's running between them, and to be able to latch onto that and to build our solution or our innovative approach perhaps from that. I also think I'm not sure, but I may be the only selected educator or teacher on the Board of Trustees. I'm unsure. I think it's a very, very good thing, or would be a very good thing for the Board of Trustees to have someone on the board who has actually been in the classroom. Because, frankly, that's what we're about more than anything else. It's teaching and learning. So I think I would bring that unique perspective as well. But I do think that I can be open-minded enough to look at the big picture and not my own, narrow base, perhaps, that I came from.
Thank you very much.
Karen? Janet, I mean?
You were on the way back when they did the mergers with the VOTEC, so to speak, and the community and state college system. I just came out of one of the technical colleges system, and one of the struggles that they are facing is being able to keep up with state-of-the-art equipment in their trades, in their different trade programs. This is becoming an issue where actually foundations have been even asked to raise private funds for replacing this. How would you address this issue, and is your thinking still that this was a good idea to merge our technical schools in the college system?
Okay, so two questions.
Yeah,
there.
Kind of sort of.
The equipment is a huge issue, and if you had asked me how could we raise some funds, I would have suggested, for one thing, that the foundations get involved. But we're talking, for a lot of the smaller rural schools, we're talking money that the foundations, amounts of money that those foundations do not have. And when the state gets back in a position or puts itself in a position to assume, again, the role that we used to play in education, I think we realize the importance of keeping our training up to date. I'm hoping, and I keep pounding on the door of the legislature and the governor's mansion and whatever else, that we would come back to the willingness that we had to invest in higher education, realizing that we're all better off because of that, and that that pays dividends in terms of taxpayers into the future. But the only other way that I can see right now is for us to build better relationships with the business community. We are training people for them, future employees for them. We want to be in tune with the latest technology, with what they need. Perhaps we can get some more help if we have a better partnership with business and industry, some more help with state-of-the-art equipment that we can use. Do I believe that it was a good thing? The perennial question?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I think that we're all better off for it. In our small community, oftentimes we'll talk to people who are members of the Chamber of Commerce and say, you know, what do you want in an employee from business and industry? My son does some hiring for the mining companies. What do you want? And they, of course, want those wonderful hands-on skills, and they want these people to be trained state-of-the-art. But they also want people who can think, who can problem-solve, who can speak, who can write, who can vote. They want all of that as well. And I think when we have become comprehensive community and technical colleges, the link that we have created now allows us to provide our technical schools, our technical students, with a number of the other things that employers are looking for as well. And it's a natural, you know, the two years are 2 years. we belong together. And most of the nation has experiences, you know, that comprehensive community and technical college.
Nancy?
Well, I'll just follow up a little bit with that. But to my knowledge, I don't think there's any other system that combines the technical, the community, and universities. So when people ask, has it been a good idea, I think it's who you're asking.
Yes.
Well, a big issue is transfer with students, as you know. And it's a big issue right now with the legislature. And I just want to make a comment that I think that the 2 years and the 4 years have worked really hard to put together articulation agreements and transfer. But I think the problem is communication, both to students and to the public about how it works. How would you address transfer issues?
Yes, that's a hot topic, all right. And I've read through the survey that was just completed, and I think there was a lot of interesting information in there. The first thing I would say is oftentimes in this state, we legislate by innuendo. If a student or two or three students have a bad experience, all of a sudden run to the legislature and say, you have to fix this, it's a horrible thing. The survey shows that it's not a horrible thing at all. That, in fact, transfer is working quite well. That's not to say there are no problems, but it is working quite well. In fact, some of the problems that we're seeing are not where we thought that they were. They are not necessarily to the state universities. They are sometimes between the community colleges and between the community colleges or the technical colleges and another technical college. So I think we learned some things from this study. I also understand, however, the concerns of students and the concerns of parents. When they look at higher education and they think you're in Minnesota, you're going to one of these schools that are all supposed to be under the same umbrella. Why can't this be seamless? Why can't this be easy? And I think it's really important for educators to sit down and to decide what it is that we hold sacred and have to hold sacred about our degrees, about the credentials of the faculty who are teaching the courses, what we're going to accept. And then I think on some of these things, the other things, there's room perhaps for some flexibility, for us being more in tune with the common sense of our, and I hate to use that word, customer, but the common sense of the students and of their parents. I don't think it's unrealistic for them to expect that when you take college writing or freshman comp or whatever you want to call it at one institution, that it should be pretty much the same content as if you take it at a different institution, so that there isn't a problem for students transferring back and forth. Our students are incredibly mobile these days. They often patch together a degree that has some online, has some bricks and mortar. They might be at two community colleges, one technical college, and two state universities by the time they get done. And people expect that that should be seamless and that that should work. And frankly, I think it should too. So I think we have to decide what is absolutely hallowed, sacred ground where we have to dig in and hold on. And some of these other issues that are common sense issues, I think we have to start ending and working through some of those.
Yes,
When you speak about customer, and that, of course, a dreaded word, but it's the truth. When you think about diversity, when you think about the field that I work in, a lot of kids coming from criminal backgrounds, and that really becoming largely an issue. I know it is down in Rochester, and these types of kids not seeing even technical college, if I can say that, as an avenue. How do you see Minscule advertising, to use the customer word, to that clientele and bringing them in to see that that is accessible? It is an opportunity to better your life.
Well, advertising is one way, but as I said in my little essay question thing, studies that we've done on diversity. This was a particular Harvard graduate school study, said that the best kind of recruitment tool that you can have for diverse populations is to create on your campus both a climate, a culture, and a collegiality that is warm and welcoming, and that spreads. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't cost any money. We're always looking at things that cost money. That doesn't cost money. That comes from conscientiousness. That comes from faculty development, where we sit down and we say our goal is going to be to create a culture that is welcoming, that is appreciative of diverse populations, even the criminal population, if that's what you were talking about. That's open and accepting. That's the best thing that we can do, and that costs nothing. No, that one is free. Also, I think once you get one or two people in the door, talk to any faculty member, and they'll tell you that we have a lot of Native Americans in my school, in my area, my campus. And once you get one or two people in, and they experience that culture, that collegiality, that warmth. All of a sudden, brother and sister comes, and cousin, and auntie, and pretty soon you have the whole family there, the whole tribe, the whole community. That I think works best. It sounds probably kind of naive to you, but studies kind of bear that out. And in this day and age, when we're dealing with a lack of funding for a lot of these initiatives, we have to look within and see what we have and see what we can do with what we've got, and that would be something that we could really work on. That's free.
How do you get those campus?
I'll call you.
Okay.
Yes, what are some of the basically skills or the greatest contributions that you would make to the board if you were at it?
Okay. I think I have a real working knowledge of the system that a lot of people wouldn't have just because I come from within the system. So I think that is an attribute. I think, as I mentioned before, that I've worked in enough heated kinds of situations at the bargaining table and whatever that I can listen to what people are saying, and as I said before, find the common thread, find the way out of the problem, and maybe the creative solution. I think the training that I've had at the bargaining table and as a mediator would be very very helpful for that. So I would say knowledge, the knowledge base that I have of the system, and I think my ability to find a common thread and to think creatively, to come to consensus and conclusions and creative solutions probably would be my greatest strength.
Carolyn?
Yes. How do we get those college campuses to create these climates of welcoming, warm welcoming?
Well, I think we probably should set up an initiative. I know that the presidents are held to task. The college presidents, in fact, their raises and their increases are dependent on what they do, how they handle diversity and increasing the diverse populations in their campus. So with an initiative, either from the Office of the Chancellor or the Board of Trustees, to focus on this particular situation for a year or for a two-year period or whatever, I think that's all it would take is a directive to begin working on this. Then, of course, on our campuses, we sit people down together and we say, okay, this is what we're working on. This is our goal for this year. This is how we're going to go about it. What are your suggestions? What do you bring to the table? And this is where the creativity really happens, because there's a million things that you can do. We can have ethnic days where we celebrate with the food of a particular culture or group. We can do all of these kinds of celebration types of things. We also can involve students. I know from personal experience and experience of some of my colleagues that oftentimes the groups that we are dealing with, we can't be concerned only with academics when they need a winter coat and they need boots. And what a great thing for students to be involved in the Student Senate. I've often thought about this, setting up a little shop in a vacant room in the college where we can all bring in our gently used, as they call them, clothing, boots and shoes and jackets and things like this to help out a number of these students who come from, warmer climes or people who just need them, don't have the money for them. These students oftentimes, part of being welcoming, they need transportation. Sometimes just getting purchasing bus tickets. You don't have a fundraiser for bus tickets or whatever else. I'm just throwing out some ideas here, but real practical ways that we can create that kind of a culture that is warm, that is welcoming to diverse groups, so that they feel at home, they feel comfortable, and they bring their brothers and their sisters and their cousins, and they come to a place that is a nurturing environment. Because then we can feed their spirits when their bodies are fed and taken care of as well.
What do you think the workforce issues in this state are, and how do you think MNSCU as a system should address those issues?
Well, We are aging. That's one of the workforce issues. We have a lot of people who are going to be retiring who need whose places will have to be filled in by newer and younger employees. I think we have to pay attention to the demographers to see where the needs we have are the greatest need, and I think MNCU has been doing that. Nursing and the healthcare fields, obviously, are fields where we have great demand. And we have to ensure, as the technical colleges are very well aware, that's a moving target. We have to be able to move swiftly to fill in the voids, the vacuums, as they appear out there on the horizon, which means, as I said, we have to be doing the research. We have to be paying attention to the demographers. We are working, and I have to continue to do even more of that, putting programs in place that are programs that are necessary for the industries that we see in our state. I know we have a new industrial technology program at our technical college that was designed by speaking with and working with the mining companies. What do they want in this employee who will be coming in now? And we have massive retirements coming in mining. Up to 50% of that workforce is going to be turned over within 5 years. And so we don't just hire people off the street. Now in mining, they won't be hired without a two-year technical degree or at least having done the apprentice program, the licensure program. There are a million different ways of gaining entrance into some of these fields. So they're maybe not addressing all of them accurately. But all of this has to – we have to be paying attention to all of this right now. We have to have good links to business and industry. We absolutely have to do that. We have to listen to their concerns, and we have to invite them to the table. We have all of our community and technical colleges have advisory committees in place for the more the technical programs. I think we have to listen to them. We have to reinvigorate them if they've kind of fallen by the wayside. But our technical programs are preparing for the workforce is only as good as our involvement with business and industry right now.
Yes, Sonia?
Being in the MNCU system, you know the role of the chancellor. So can you give me some characteristics, traits, or attributes that you feel are imperative for the next chancellor to have that you would look for as a trustee when hiring the new CEO?
Well, he has to be knowledgeable of national higher ed issues and trends. He has to be knowledgeable of financial aid issues, the Pell Grant, all of that system. He or she has to be knowledgeable, helps to be knowledgeable of the Minnesota legislature and how things work in Minnesota. As I said earlier, it would be a good attribute to have worked in a collective bargaining state. He or she needs to be an excellent people person, be able to think on his or her feet and to field questions comfortably. Has to be dedicated to teaching and learning first and foremost, and to students. Has to understand and appreciate the mission statement of the MNCU system. Has to have a good rapport with business and industry. has to be willing to travel. It's a big state that we live in, and those of us in the rural areas like people who are in charge of us to come and visit us once in a while and to move the operation to the corners of the state from time to time so that we can see a trustees meeting, you know, firsthand in Virginia, Minnesota, or in Pipestone or Canby or, you know, Fergus Falls, whatever. That's quite a list.
Thank you. It's a good list.
John?
Thanks. Just following up on that, I was just thinking, given your own experience in the system as a trustee, if you were visiting those different campuses, what are some of the things that you would look for to get as full a sense as possible of what is happening at the campus, what needs are there, how would you learn those campuses, anything that you've sort of over time thought that you would delve into a bit as you visited there? Because I know sometimes the visits are more social than not, or, you know, a short presentation and a dinner and, you know, that sort of thing. Would you go beyond that in any way?
Well, actually, I've been on almost all of those campuses at some point or another. I've worn out two cars traveling all over the state. But I think it's important when you go to those go to the different colleges and experience their culture and their environment. I always enjoy looking at the countryside as I'm coming in. I didn't realize all of the wind energy that we had down in the Pipestone Canby, down in that corner of the state. That was an awakening for me when I drove down there and I saw all of the windmills up there on the ridge. I think you have to open up your eyes and see what's going on. I think you have to open up your eyes and see what the community looks like, what shape the towns are in as you drive by the school. What shape are they in? What is the main livelihood for people here in this particular place? All of these kinds of peripheral things. I think it's good when the trustees or anybody comes to visit, whether it's legislators or whatever, to have present a broad spectrum of people, and not for us to talk, but for them to talk about what their concerns are, what their needs are. I think it's important to look at the facilities and not just everything that's all spiffed up and shined up for the visit, you know, but to take a good look at the facilities, where the needs are at the ceilings, and to see what condition our buildings that we are supposed to be stewards of, what condition they're actually in. So I guess those are kind of the things I look for and the people I would want to talk to.
Nancy?
Can you comment on your understanding of the role of a trustee?
The role of the trustee primarily is to serve the mission of Minskew. The role of the trustee should have, first and foremost, the trustee should have, I believe, first and foremost in his or her mind, teaching and learning. And the rest of these things are all peripheral to taking care of students, teaching and learning. We tend sometimes to flip flop. We tend sometimes to get caught up in all of the other aspects, because there are many of them, that's for sure, in this huge higher ed system, and to lose sight of the fact that these are all to serve students and teaching and learning, so they can't get out of proportion. I think a major role, a thing that I would be looking at, is to get that budget, that allocation, more in proportion to where I think that it should be, which is more spent on teaching and learning than on some of the other things that we're spending money on. And I think maybe the legislative auditor's report, though I thought it was relatively friendly to Minskew, did hint at some of that. I think for a higher ed institution to spend 50% or less of its allocation on direct instruction is not what we should be doing. We need to get that focus back on teaching and learning. And if we're going to do any paring back, any cutting back, it's going to have to be on the things that are peripheral. The student, the system exists for the students, not to provide all of these other things that are nice. But in these tough economic times, the role of the trustee, the role of the board of trustees, always, not just in tough economic times, should be to put the major focus on teaching and learning and bring that budget and that allocation in a better proportion than I think it's at right now.
Last question.
Okay, great. How would you handle or deal with a conflict of interest in the event that it arises?
Well, my husband is a lawyer, so I would call him immediately. We've had this discussion. And I think if I have even a sense that something is amiss here, if I have a question in my mind that on a particular issue there may be a conflict, I need to inform the rest of the trustees, and I need to abstain from voting. Is how I would look at some of these issues. If there's a reasonable assumption that a reasonable person out there would see my voting on a particular issue as a conflict, I would disclose that to the board. Seek their advice, and depending on what was said, not vote on a particular issue. I would err on the side of not creating a conflict or an illusion of conflict. That would be my approach.
Very good. We have a couple minutes for final comments you want to make about your candidacy.
I would address this to you and particularly to the governor. If this Board of Trustees seats that are open are simply honorary, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that you could find to put in an honorary position. But if we are looking for a working board, if you want a trustee who is knowledgeable of the system, inside and out, and dedicated to the system, I think I'm your person.
Well, thank you very much. Great.
Thank you.